The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Red Leg Nation Radio. I'm Chad Dotson. With me again is our buddy Joel Luckup. Joel, how you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm actually broadcasting tonight from my own basement for the first time, so I am not afraid of cliches.
Wait a minute. Your basement or your mother's basement?
Well, it's actually my basement,
Wow.
I guess it's not totally a cliche, but it is a basement.
That's pretty impressive.
And I think that's close enough, so...
Oh, the fact that you've made it out of your mother's basement it brings hope to sabermetricians everywhere.
We all have dreams.
That's right. Welcome to the All Injury Podcast, where all we talk about all the time are Reds injuries. I think pretty much that's going to be the topic of conversation tonight.
Ow! Oh, man, I just pulled something,
Oh,
too.
Man, we're...
It's our epidemic.
Our first podcast disabled list... Our first person placed on the podcast disabled list. Let's just say that.
I will not go on the 60-day DL either.
Excellent. Excellent.
I am day-to-day, but I am not actually day-to-day. I'm actually month-to-month.
So we won't have to remove you from the three-man roster
to make
room. Okay. Excellent. Well, the first thing we need to talk about, which is clearly the most important thing going on right now, it's that the University of Virginia Cavaliers are now in the Sweet 16 of the NCAA basketball tournament. And now, while I know that everyone listening here is either mad about Indiana not being in or Cincinnati getting beat early or happy about Kentucky and Louisville, permit me just a moment to revel in the fact that for once, the University of Virginia is actually doing well. I'm pretty excited. Anything you want to add to this conversation, Joel?
No, I went to a Division III school so that I could avoid these types of conversations.
Well, if I had thought about it before I chose a college, I probably wouldn't have picked University of Virginia because I want to avoid these conversations usually. But finally, they're doing well, and I'm actually thinking about heading up to Madison Square Garden next week.
Wow.
To see Virginia play against Michigan State. That should be a fun time.
Yeah, well, they're probably going to lose, so I hope you don't waste too much money. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry. Actually, see, somehow Michigan State is my son's most favorite team, which I've still yet to figure it out. But so I guess I'm not really rooting for anybody at any point. I used to be a big Kentucky Wildcats fan. And then I kind of lost out. In fact, yesterday I was kind of rooting for Wichita State to win.
Oh,
so
wow.
I'm a baseball fan.
Well, me too. And I'm happy to talk about baseball. And you're probably right. Virginia's probably going down, but I'm pretty happy with their season anyway. But let's talk about baseball because we are right on the precipice of opening day. And I'm not sure the Reds are going to be able to have nine players to field a team for opening day. They certainly may not have enough pitchers to go around. What is going on right now?
I don't know. It's, you know, some of it, I was thinking about that this morning, and I think some of it might actually just be the, you know, spring training injuries, you know, the kind of thing where if it were September, these guys probably would pitch through a little bit or they wouldn't be so concerned about it. I'm hoping. Now, obviously, Matt Latos is coming off of surgery, and so that's why he's behind a little bit. I wonder if the Homer Bailey thing would have been, you know, during the regular season would have been one of those cases where maybe he just misses a start or something like that. It just seems a lot scarier now because – they're maybe perhaps a little more cautious than they would be during the regular season. And, you know, and the talk of like Johnny Cueto and possibly him having injured scapula, which is, you know, sounds like a rock band, scapula.
Oh, hair metal. I love it.
Right. But so, you know, having an injury or something like that is one of those things that, you know, maybe they don't even bring up during the season unless it's, you know, ends up being more serious than they had thought. So that's the optimistic take on it as much as I can. It's very frightening, though, don't you think?
Oh, it definitely is. And I think you may be right that some of these things maybe seem a little more serious to us now because they're being extra cautious, number one. And number two, it's sort of on top of some more serious injuries, and they're just sort of piling on top of each other.
Right. The volume is definitely concerning.
Right, yes. Even if there's only maybe one or two of these that are something that really we need to be concerned about. Obviously, the most serious and the one that's on everyone's mind is Aroldis Chapman. And you know, I wasn't listening to the game that night, but I saw on Twitter Aroldis Chapman hit by a line drive. And so I turned on Marty to see what he was saying, and it was really as disturbing as it could have been, given that I didn't have any pictures, because Marty really was not saying a whole lot, and the picture he was painting was not good. Aroldis down on the field, bringing out a stretcher, and very, very scary. You see the pictures over the next couple days of what happened after he underwent surgery and those staples, that picture of those staples, it still gives me nightmares. But then, you know, a day or two later, he's in the Reds clubhouse and smiling, and they say he can begin working out in 10 to 14 days, maybe ready to pitch in game conditions 4 to 6 weeks. So I guess it could have been much, much, much worse, but I can't imagine many things on this team. Maybe something happening to Joey Votto like that would be as scary as what happened to Aroldis Chapman then.
Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, I'm still sort of have the shivers over it.
Yeah, and the actual event, I think, is pretty much outside of like seeing a clean break or something like that. The actual event was pretty much the worst thing that can happen on a ball field, you know? And, you know, it's quite scary that kind of thing can happen, because it's totally out of the control of everybody involved. The hitter doesn't want to do it. The pitcher obviously doesn't want it to happen. And it's so bang bang that it's just so frightening to see it happen. And frankly, it's quite amazing that it doesn't happen more often. To see it happen at such an extreme degree, and then, you know, to hear all of the you talked about the staples. The worst thing for me was the description of them peeling his face back.
I was trying to avoid that. I was trying to stay away from that. Thanks a lot.
I know, but you got to go graphic, or you're never gonna skew young enough with the podcast.
There you go. Good point.
But the whole event is just, it's one of those things that it's as a human and as a person that doesn't play that sport, it's one of those things that you look at and you can't imagine that somebody could get back out onto the field after something like that happened. But these guys, there's a reason why they're different, and there's a reason why they make it to the big leagues. And for some reason, they're able to get that fear out of their head and not worry about it. So hopefully, I think of all the things, because it doesn't sound like the concussion was that bad, and maybe there might be a few lingering effects there, but it doesn't sound like it's going to be one of those severe concussion cases that last for a whole year or for a couple of years or for the rest of his life, hopefully. Ultimately, the real question is going to be whether or not he can overcome the psychological effect and be comfortable out there on the pitching mound again. And, you know, the only way we'll ever know that is until he gets out there on the pitching mound again.
Yeah, and actually that is absolutely the best case scenario as far as I'm concerned, because it happens, and you're right. It's a wonder it doesn't happen more often. And the only way to a pitcher can protect himself is by not pitching, really. I mean, that there's no way to avoid that. It's going to happen occasionally, unfortunately, short of wearing a mask or something.
Well, and the funny thing, and not to like completely kill the conversation with an aside here, but so I went to fantasy camp in 2010, and I had never pitched before, never in Little League or anything like that. The first pitch I threw in fantasy camp, which was like on day three or day four, I threw, and the guy lined it right back, and I had put my glove down just in time to protect and enable me to be able to have children again. So,
well, that's even worse.
Yeah. Well,
than what happened to Aroldis.
Yes. So, it, you know, but it was the first pitch I'd ever thrown, and so that scared the, you know, the bejesus out of me.
No doubt.
And yet somehow I still managed to pitch. So come on, Aroldis, get back out there.
Yeah, really. If you can get back out on the mound, what's his excuse?
I'm a coward.
Exactly. He's a professional athlete. Really, in some ways, hearing the descriptions of the surgery that he underwent, and then just seeing the pictures of the video of what happened, it's really strange to say best case scenario, but I really, in some ways, it was. I mean, they're talking brain damage originally, you know, and it could be anything from death, you know, down to, you know, any number of situations could be imagined. And as it turns out, it looks like he's maybe the biggest fear is just how's he going to respond psychologically. And that's a serious fear, and it's something we're just going to have to wait and see. But you think about the first thing I thought about when it happened was Brandon McCarthy, who was, mm-hmm. Hit by a line drive back in September of 2012, epidural hemorrhage, brain contusion, skull fracture. And, of course, he returned. So it could have been a lot worse, I guess, is what I'm saying. I don't mean to minimize what happened to Aroldis. I'm very, very thankful, though, that it's not worse than it was, because over the first couple of days, it very, very scary. And I'm amazed he's able to smile and laugh about it at this point, frankly,
because yeah.
That's a tough situation.
Yeah, and it helps just being a weird dude, I guess.
Maybe
one
so.
One of those times where his eccentricities probably is helping him through the situation.
Well, maybe. Maybe the confidence that goes along with calling yourself Mr. 105, et cetera, maybe that's something that's going to help him when he gets back on the mound. We'll wait and see. Since we're in the bullpen, we've talked, I think you and I have talked about Jonathan Broxton and Sean Marshall before.
Are they on the Reds?
No, my goodness. It's Nick Massett all over again.
I joked to somebody that Sean Marshall is taking over the honorary Reds pitcher role from Nick Massett now. So
the Nick Massett chair in the Reds pitching department. Yeah, well, we'll talk about Marshall first, I guess. I don't know what to think about Sean Marshall. He is one of my favorite players on the team. But it's a continually sore shoulder. He's every time he throws, he's feeling great. Then a couple days later, he's got a setback. And you know, he has been injured now for, what, 6-8 months, except for a very short time at the end of last season. How's this guy not healthy after a full off season is what I wonder. I mean, what is he ever going to be healthy if he can't heal up over an off season?
Yeah, and that's a big question, because the hardest part, I think, about all of this medical stuff is that each pitcher is unique and individual, and what works for one guy may not work for another, and that's very frustrating as fans, because we're not there on a day to day. I'm sure it's very frustrating to the players, but you know, I can't really talk about their perspective. But as a fan, not being there on a day to day, so we don't really know what they're doing. And you hear a lot of, you know, I said earlier on Twitter this week that every team thinks that they're, or every fan base thinks that their team mismanages injuries.
Right. Yeah.
And I think some of that comes from the fact that we don't understand what goes on in the background, and we don't know why somebody like Sean Marshall continues to be hurt. Well, here's the fact of it: could just be that Sean Marshall's body just isn't made to do this, and it's unfortunate. But you got somebody like Bronson Arroyo, who is some weird wizard who is able to survive, you know, and pitch so many years and stay healthy all these years, although this year he does not appear to be as healthy as he normally is. And then you have somebody like Sean Marshall, who, you know, has, great talent, but is unable to stay healthy. And it's just the way it goes. And you know, we're just not good enough at the whole science of pitching mechanics and pitching health to be able to figure out some of these things. And it could just be that's how it is with Sean Marshall. I hope it's not, but you know, sometimes you just have to admit that we don't know everything.
No, that's precisely what I fear. And we are, listen, on this podcast, we've questioned Doc Krymcheck and the Reds medical staff over and over. But that's really what I fear with Sean Marshall. And like I said, I'm a very big fan of Sean Marshall. He's a guy, and we'll talk about who's going to be the closer in Chapman's absence here in just one moment. But he's a guy that I felt should be the closer anyway, with Chapman in the rotation. This guy's great, but at some point you really got to wonder, you know, is he going to be able to, you know, pitching in the major leagues, it's a violent motion, it's an unnatural motion, and it's tough on a person's arm and shoulder. I'm concerned that Marshall's never going to be healthy again. It's very, very, very unfortunate. I never really considered that until he comes into spring training this year and he's just still injured. Very, very, it's a shame because they gave up a good pitcher for him. I thought in the end it was a pretty good trade when they traded Travis Wood to the Cubs for him, because Marshall, like I said, when he's pitching, when he's healthy, this guy gets people out as well as any reliever in the majors.
And while I don't normally like the idea of trading starting pitching for relief pitching, at that point in time, the Reds certainly had a little bit of a surplus of starting pitching and could afford to give some up in place of getting somebody who was the quality of Marshall.
Right. When they made the trade, I was a little skeptical. They signed him to a 2 or 3 year contract, whatever it was, and I thought, well, you know, going to have this guy around, an elite of reliever for this number of years. At the very least, it's a toss up. You know, not a bad trade. And ordinarily, you trade a good young starting pitcher for a reliever. I'm not going to usually be happy about that. Well, his buddy in the bullpen, Jonathan Broxton, actually pitched in a minor league game today. I think he's pitched in a couple of games, and he's obviously recovering from surgery last August, surgery on his right forearm. You know, I'm not a fully paid member of the Jonathan Broxton fan club anyway, but he's better than some of what the Reds can throw out there in the bullpen, and I'm starting to wonder if he's even going to be available or when he's going to be available, because the Reds bullpen all of a sudden is looking very, very thin.
Exactly. The funny thing about the report, I think it was John Fay reported today that Jonathan Broxton pitched without incident. So,
and that's exciting given the current state of Reds pitchers.
I know. So it's funny that that's a positive description. But yeah, you know, with Chapman out. And I'm not a huge Broxton fan, but that's more has to do with the fact that I wouldn't have given him the contract that they gave him. But I still think he's a quality pitcher. I don't think that last year he was healthy. I'm afraid that he may never be healthy again. I mean, he wasn't particularly healthy before the Reds traded for him either. He had Tommy John surgery, missed a bunch of time, and you know, never really was completely back to who he had been before the surgery. So I've always been a little concerned about him, but now him having, you know, a little bit of continuing injury here is a little bit disconcerting, kind of to go along with Sean Marshall. And I hate to say it, and I hate to always do this whenever we talk about this, but it's another indicator of why you don't give these big, long contracts to relievers. And I know 3 years doesn't seem that long, but for a reliever, 3 years is a long contract. And it's so unnecessary, and you so put yourself into a situation that really just makes it more difficult for your team when one of these guys goes down, because you've spent money on guys that are not, you know, are hardly productive, hardly worth that money when they're pitching. So when they're not pitching, they're basically just a waste of space.
Yeah, absolutely. And you got Marshall and Broxton both now signed to, we can't call them long-term deals, but too long for, in general, for relievers.
Right.
And Broxton, of course, he was quoted yesterday as saying, "I still have to get where I can throw my fastball. I felt fine. I'm just throwing it everywhere right now."
Yeah.
If Broxton's not able to throw a fastball, what's he good for? I mean, he can destroy a buffet table, I'm sure. He's, I'm sure, a great teammate. But if he doesn't have a fastball, and his fastball, even since he joined the Reds, has not been what it was in his heyday with Los Angeles, he's probably an average reliever at best, maybe slightly above average. And there's some value to being a slightly above average reliever. I'm not sure it's what people are counting on him to be.
Right, it's a depth thing. You know, he'll provide you depth, but he's not right. He's not going to be the guy that comes in, and if they're desperate for somebody to close out games, I don't think he's going to be that guy this year, at any point this year. Even if, you know, if for some reason Chapman never comes back this year, you know, Broxton, I don't believe, will end up ever being that guy that they can rely upon in the, you know, late in games. I felt that he's probably, you know, if we had to assign innings, he's probably a seventh inning guy. I don't even really consider him an eighth inning guy. I don't think he's got the ability to get outs on his own like he used to. He depends on the defense a little too much.
Right. People are remembering the Jonathan Broxton that was an all-star with Los Angeles and threw 1,000 miles an hour and blew people away. He's just not that guy anymore. He's never going to be that guy again, and it's not fair to expect him to be. He could help the team, but not until he gets healthy. So all of a sudden, talking about the bullpen, we've got Aroldis Chapman out now for a couple of months at best, six weeks at best. You've got Broxton and Marshall. Brian Price says they're not going to be ready to start the season. You've got Alfredo Simon now, who's going to start the season in the rotation because Latos is behind schedule. And we'll talk about the rotation in a moment. But all of a sudden, this is looking like a very, very thin bullpen. And when asked who's going to close games, Brian Price said, basically, well, whoever we've got. And he specifically named J.J. Hoover, who can handle it, Sam LaCure, who's been effective, Manny Parra, who was good last year, and then Andrew the Giant, Logan Andrusek. And the thought, you know, I don't assign a whole lot of value to the term closer anyway. I think more people can do it than I guess the general consensus is. But Logan Andrusek in high intensity moments kind of worries me a little bit. Am I completely off base there?
No, he's another pitcher that depends. Although his strikeout numbers were up last year, he's another pitcher that depends on his defense quite a bit. And those just aren't the kind of guys that you want pitching, later in games with the pressure on. And it doesn't have as much to do so much with the pitcher as that the situations. You get into those tense situations, maybe a runner gets into scoring position, you need to hold down a two-run lead, and you don't want somebody who is going to be trying to pinpoint pitches so that he can get the type of hit that he needs. You need somebody who's going up there that feels like they can get a swing and a miss when they need it. And so that's the thing that's concerning about those types of guys. And that's why they don't typically work out so well in later in innings. I don't think it's as much to do with mentality or anything like that. I think it has to do with the sheer ability of the situation and the ability to get out when the pressure requires you to try to do something to get an effective out, not just an out where the ball's put in play that could turn into a hit kind of stuff.
Yeah. I don't mind necessarily having Andrusek on the pitching staff, but he's a more, like we talked about earlier, he's sort of more of a depth arm. I don't mind LaCure in high intensity moments. I don't mind Hoover. Manny Parra has actually maybe changed my mind after watching him, although I'm still a little bit skeptical about whether Brian Price has really turned him into a different Manny Parra than he was before he joined the Reds. But I'm afraid early in the year when starting pitchers just aren't generally going to go that many innings anyway, still building up, I'm concerned if this bullpen has to throw a lot of innings, that's really going to be it's really going to hurt the Reds early in the year. And this team really, I feel like, needs to get off to a pretty strong start, given, I think, the general feeling around Reds land that they didn't improve much in the offseason. I think for attendance purpose, if nothing else, they need to get off to a hot start. And I'm really concerned about this bullpen throwing a lot of innings.
When they get a tough schedule early on, I mean, they play Cardinals, Mets, Cardinals, Rays, Pirates, Cubs, Pirates, Braves, Cubs all through April. So, I mean, they're going to rely on that bullpen quite a bit. So it's a shame that, you know, Chapman's gone and the other two big guys are down. They're really going to have to hope that they catch one of those hot months from those relievers, and maybe, you know, somebody like Nick Cristiani will surprise us out of the bullpen and, you know, pitch lights out for a month. And really kind of that's, you know, hope is not a strategy, but you're kind of at that point right now that all you've got is to be, you know, at this point is to hope that, you know, these guys can handle the workload that they're going to have thrust upon them for that first month.
Fingers are crossed. Now,
yep.
Moving on to the starting rotation, got a little bit of good news. But actually, all five of the Reds' projected starters for this year have some sort of lingering issue right now, and some of it's things that, like you said earlier, we might not worry about so much if it were August. But Matt Latos obviously was the most serious. He had left knee surgery, repaired a torn meniscus cartilage, and he started on Monday today. We're recording this on Monday in a minor league game, I think a double A game. His velocity was up to 93, throwing free and easy, evidently, and all good reports that I heard. He's not going to be ready for opening day, but he's recovering as well, I guess, as could be hoped from that surgery. So the bad news is sort of tinged with a little bit of good news, finally, when we're talking about Matt Latos. They got to get him back as quick as possible.
Yeah, and hopefully he'll only miss maybe a start or two starts at the most, which would be great. And, you know, the good thing is I think Alfredo Simon is the kind of guy that's going to be able to handle a couple starts. I wouldn't want him in the rotation for, you know, 2 or 3 months, but I think he's kind of he's got the kind of stuff that will allow him to get away with a couple starts. And hopefully it's not against, you know, hopefully they can get him on the schedule so that he's against teams like the Mets and the Cubs and not so much against the Cardinals and the, you know, the Rays and the Pirates, the better teams.
Yeah, and Brian Price has talked about mixing his starters up, looking at matchups. And I never would have guessed it 2 years ago, but if you'd have told me I was going to say, I really don't mind Alfredo Simon making a spot start or two, I never would have believed that I would actually say that. But I agree. I don't want him in my rotation, but I'm more comfortable with him now than I would have been a couple years ago. Being able to handle that on a short-term basis.
Right.
Now, Homer Bailey, I'm sorry, you ready to say something?
No.
Okay, Homer Bailey is another guy who pitched in a minor league game today. Homer Bailey strained right groin, probably the type of thing where he misses a starter or maybe two in the regular season, and we move on with it, but we're all on pins and needles now. Threw pretty well today, had a little bit of an issue today, but worked through it. Hit his pitch limit and is supposedly healthy. And he thinks, I guess Brian Price thinks he's going to be ready to go.
Then I'm going to trust Brian Price because I can't handle the stress.
It's just easier to trust Brian Price, right?
Yeah.
So hopefully that's much ado about nothing. Johnny Cueto, the other of the big three. Oh, man. Now, Brian Price says, I'll quote him here, "The concern level is minor, very minor." He's supposed to start a minor league game, I think, tomorrow on Tuesday. They said he could have pitched yesterday, which was, I guess, Sunday. But we felt being proactive, it was best not to, he was quoted as saying, best not to exasperate the issue. I'm not sure that's quite what he meant to say. Said it's something he could pitch with, but it'd be a nagging issue. Given the injury concerns that I already have with Johnny Cueto and the history of injuries over the last couple years, I'm not going to deny being concerned that we're starting another year in which Johnny Cueto is not going to be 100% for much of the season. And I hope that I'm just jumping to a conclusion that I shouldn't jump to, but I don't know, maybe I won't be burned again, I guess. Are you as concerned as I am?
I don't know. I don't know that I'm. I am. I am. I'm trying to convince myself that I'm not. Yes, I'm concerned, but at this point, I'm not gonna stress about it because I don't know what good. Basically, what it comes down to is at this point, if Cueto is hurt and misses a bunch of starts in April, and only makes his opening day start, say. And then after that is out for a while, you know, we're talking about 2015 probably. And not that Cueto is that crucial moment, you know, that singularly crucial pitcher, but I think the combination of Cueto and Latos potentially missing a couple starts, you know, Chapman being out a while, the bullpen, as we've talked about, being pretty thin. It's teetering. I feel like it's teetering. And this is – I'm not normally a pessimistic person, especially not at this point in the season. But it is very concerning, you know, that Cueto seems to – that he could potentially have, similar types of injury to what he's been dealing with. And, you know, you kind of worry about that. So, yes, I am worried. I am worried.
I'm conscious of the fact that when I say this, I sound like every other person who tweets at John Fay or at Trent Rosecrans, because every other tweet that people send to those guys seem to begin with, should we be worried yet, or should we be concerned? And I don't want to be one of these guys that is pessimistic, although I generally, frankly, am, because the Reds have beaten me down over the years. Although they've sort of turned me into a little bit of an optimist over the last few years, because they've done so many things right. But I guess the fact is that, and we've talked about this before, this team, in my opinion, is so dependent, it will be so dependent on this starting rotation. Because, you know, the hitting, there's a chance that the hitting can be certainly improved. If not an elite offense, they could be an improved offense and a decent lineup. But even then, it just feels to me like this team is going to be so dependent on these starters. And I'm concerned about not having all five of them all year long, because they are they're a good rotation when they're healthy. And I'm a big fan of Johnny Cueto. I love watching him pitch. Love his personality. I think that he love having him on the Reds. I want him healthy. The Reds absolutely need him, because when he's healthy, I talked about the big three a moment ago. He and Latos and Baylor are as good as just about anybody else around. But if all three of those guys are battling nagging injuries for too long, I mean, it's one thing if it's just the first week or two of the season and then everybody's back and these nagging injuries are behind them and the Reds are full strength. But if these things last, like you say, too much longer than the first couple of weeks, it's going to start to get ugly, I'm afraid. I'm being too pessimistic, I know.
Yeah, the thing about it for me, and the thing that I felt all during the off season and going into spring, was that the team was good. The team could, you know, win 87 games or 90 games or whatever. What concerned me was that there wasn't a lot of depth, that they weren't going to be able to handle injuries. And now, you know, obviously we've spent the last, you know, 30 minutes talking about injuries, and that's the topic of conversation. So it's kind of a worst case scenario staring us right in the face, that the one thing that was going to keep this team from being competitive is those injuries, and they're there. And so, you know, I understand people who are agonizing over the start of this season. It's understandable, and I'm sure the Reds are agonizing about it. The, you know, injuries aren't fun in the first place, but when you have so many of them hit you all at the same time, it's definitely a terrifying situation to be in. So I am not, like I said, I am not a pessimist, but I am certainly concerned about how things look right now. I'm concerned that they don't have a lot of opportunity to, if one of these guys ends up having to miss a while. Because one of the thoughts that came to me while during this whole conversation was, well, they may have to trade for a bullpen arm, but I'm not real sure that they have the ability to do that, not to get somebody that is worth trading for. You know, you may end up being able to trade for somebody who is a big contract that somebody wants to dump or something like that. But I just don't see them having the ability to trade for the kind of bullpen arm that would be both reliable and also wouldn't be a big contract. So it's stuff like that that you look at it and you try to be optimistic about it, but it was it's very, very nerve-wracking right now.
I bet, here's what I'm going to predict. We're going to do some predictions later, but here's my big prediction. If the Reds do need a bullpen arm, like you say, and they need to go out and get one, hey, why not Gary Majeski? I bet he's available. or David Weathers.
I'm not even going to acknowledge that statement.
Yeah, that's probably wise. Mike Leake and Tony Cingrani, as well, the back end of the Reds rotation. Mike Leake dealing with a little bit of an abdominal muscle issue, and Tony Cingrani, what I've seen described as a dead arm. That sounds like a bad injury for a pitcher. A dead arm?
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is dead arm back in the old days used to mean, yeah, this guy's toast and we don't know what to do about it.
Right.
Nowadays, it means, you know, that there's that period that they go through. You know, you come into camp and your arm, you're very energetic. And then you start to build up some innings on the arm, and the arm goes through a tired period, and it kind of has to wake up again. And, you know, we hear about this pretty frequently. I think just about every spring somebody goes through a dead arm period. And especially the younger guys who haven't quite gotten that routine down yet to figure out, you know, where their biorhythms need to be in terms of timing themselves. And it's quite possible that maybe Cingrani just came out a little too exuberantly for the start of spring training and maybe overworked himself a little bit too much early on and probably, you know, put himself in that situation, hopefully. See, I'm optimistic.
I like the optimism, but you're over here talking about biorhythms and and all this. All I'm saying is, if a guy's a pitcher in the major leagues and his arm actually dies, that seems like a bad thing to me. I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't be so worried about that.
Oh, so you were just trying to be a smart aleck. I thought you wanted some real analysis. I'm sorry. I'll turn my snark back on.
No, we count on you for real analysis because heaven knows I'm not going to provide any of that. Okay, so that's where we are with the pitchers, and I want to be optimistic. Every spring I want to be optimistic, but all these injuries being piled upon the fact that the Reds were unable to really improve their roster over a team that finished in third place last year, I think it's like everything keeps piling on. Is nothing going to go right for this team? Open day could come. They win opening day, win four of their first five games, and all of a sudden everybody's back in happy land and we're all enjoying it. It could happen, and hopefully these are just little things, with the exception of Latos, who seems to be the most serious of all the starters, and he's on the verge of coming back. If you want to be optimistic, it's not hard to be. They could all be ready very early in the season, and the Reds can really start rolling. So I want to be optimistic. I'm trying. I'm not succeeding, but I'm trying.
Well, you know, without fail, whatever happens in the first week of the season will completely change the mood of the majority of the fan base, good or bad.
Oh, yeah. The first couple of games, probably. You know how it works.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, let's talk about – we've talked about the pitchers. Let's shift quickly to the lineup in terms of the hitters. Really only one injury that to a player that's expected to be a real someone the Reds are really counting on this year that we really probably need to talk about. And of course, I'm talking about Skip Schumaker. Mm-hmm. No. We'll talk about Skip in a moment. But Devin Mesoraco strained the oblique. And they keep saying, well, it's, you know, something they need to – first of all, they said the first response, 48 hours of inactivity. Let's reassess, see where we are. And they keep sort of – slowing their roll on that a little bit. Today he took 30 swings, but now they're talking about good chance he's not going to be ready for opening day because he's not hit against any live pitching now for a week, 10 days. The Reds need Devin Mesoraco, in my opinion. Talking about being optimistic, this is a guy that I've been optimistic is going to really take a big step forward this year. He's going to be one of the guys that's going to improve their performance enough so that collectively this Reds offense improves over last year. Having Brian Pena starting four out of six games kind of scares me a little bit. But there's no reason to be pessimistic here. He's going to be back early anyway. That's what we think, right?
Yes. I am going to be optimistic about this one. I choose to be optimistic about Devin Mesoraco. I think that this is one of those cases that if it had been regular season, they would have been cautious for a couple of days, and then he would have, bitten on the popsicle stick and worked his way through it. You know, that's what I'm going to say.
Yeah. So, I think you're right.
I choose not to be pessimistic about this one.
I choose to be optimistic. That's going to be the theme of this podcast. We choose to be optimistic because you've got to make that a conscious choice because so many things want to make you teeter over to the other side. Otherwise, everyone else pretty healthy in terms of the starting lineup, unless I'm not thinking of someone. Ryan Ludwig's healthy, but I'm not sure that he can hit anymore. Skip Schumacher, of course, dislocated his left shoulder diving for a ball. Probably means that Roger Bernardino is going to make the roster. Not sure that one way or the other, the Reds are better for worse or better or worse either way. There, maybe you've got a different opinion on that. Schumacher's going to be out for a month or so.
Yep.
That's about all to say about Skip.
That's about it. I mean,
Jack Hanahan, you want to talk about him?
He isn't coming back until, you know, after the season. I don't know. I mean, it's on the one hand, it's like, well, the good thing is that a lot of these guys were pretty interchangeable. Now, they don't have, you know, Schumacher has the had quote unquote versatility, but honestly, he's not that great defensively at any of the position he plays. So it's not like you're losing that. You know, he did one thing well, that which is get on base, and I'm not sure that you can say that about any of these other guys. Now, Bernardino has some history in his, you know, where he's had good seasons, but as I recall, it was fairly BABIP driven, and you know, I wouldn't place a lot, you know, big bets on him having some sort of a surprise breakout season or anything like that. Looking at that pool, the pool of guys that they have, I don't see anybody that, you know, screams to me, okay, well, thank God this guy's going to get a chance now. And so I guess what I'm saying is that, you know, Schumacher's down. They'll fill him. They'll replace him with somebody who's more or less his equivalent, and we'll move on.
Well, and every year I'm basically preaching to people, it's the 25th guy on the roster. You know, we're going to have Bernardino, we're going to have Neftali Soto, maybe. Really not that big a deal. One reason to be optimistic, since we choose to be optimistic here, is that, you know, 7/8 of the presumed starting lineup, pretty healthy. And Chris Heisey, who can't get his way into the starting lineup, maybe is having obviously spring stats are spring stats, but having a good spring, hitting a lot of home runs. So, you know, again, if you're looking for a reason to be optimistic, at least the guys are healthy other than Mesoraco.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm not worried about the offense right now. That's for sure. I mean, and we're getting, you know, Hamilton's kind of come back down to earth a little bit, but he's still having a pretty good spring. And, you know, at the very least, he's going to go into the, he's going to go into the season confident, I think. And that's a good thing. You know, there's nothing wrong with being a little overconfident about your abilities, if not, you know, properly confident.
Well, how'd you like to be a rookie setting foot on the major league scene, and you have Joey Votto saying that this guy could be a future MVP? He qualified it by saying if he'll learn to take a walk, but still,
right.
That's pretty high praise from one of the most thoughtful players and one of the best players in the game. I'm sure he is confident.
My favorite part of that quote is that it's almost like Joey's trolling all his critics by saying if he can take a walk.
Right, yeah, exactly. Because clearly that's the thing that he's doing wrong in terms of his approach. So, well, okay. So we're choosing to be optimistic. Unless there's something else you want to talk about in terms of all these roster decisions and the injuries, you want to move on to some predictions?
Sure.
All right. Well, I'll go ahead and make my prediction. I'll jump off this particular ledge. I'm predicting for the Reds this year, I'm going to predict 89 wins, which seems optimistic to me now that I say it out loud in some ways. And I'm going to predict second place, but 8 or 9 games out of first. But in that one game wild card playoff with a chance to, who knows? You got to be in the dance to be able to play in the World Series. So that's my first prediction. Now, I'm expecting you to tell me precisely how wrong I am.
You're not that wrong. I think second place. I think about an 87 win. I mean, I've been calling them an 87 win team, with the caveat that I think they can win 90, 92 games. I think they have that potential with them. I think they could also win 82 games. But I think they're probably an 87 win team. I think that's about what they'll win. And I think second place. I think the Pirates are going to regress quite a bit this year. And then, you know, they'll bounce back. I think the Pirates are going to be good for a while. But, you know, the Reds, this will be a good chance for them to get to the playoffs again. I think you know, 87 is not going to get them to the playoffs. They'll need an extra win here or there, but they'll be in the hunt. And I think that that'll be enough to either, you know, have them make a move to push themselves over the top, or, you know, have them super motivated to push themselves over the top.
Yeah, they're going to be in the hunt. And for most of my adult life anyway, just being in the hunt would have been plenty enough for me to really be over the moon with excitement over the Reds. So let's try not to lose sight of the fact that these aren't the Eric Milton, Jimmy Haynes Reds that we're talking about.
Right. And my bold prediction will be that if they do make it to the playoffs, they will win a series this time.
Really?
Maybe not the World Series, but they will win a series.
Now, are we talking about the one-game playoff, or are we talking about an actual series?
We'll call it an actual series. So they will make it to the ALCS if they make it to the playoffs. I'm not going to say they're making it to the playoffs yet. I'm not that confident. And the postseason's a lot different than the regular season. But if they do make it to the postseason, I am confident they will win a series this year.
At some point, it's got to even out for them. They've had
has to work eventually, right?
At some point, with the sort of bad luck they've had, I guess you could say, in the playoffs. I don't know that I'm willing to go quite that far. Although, if I wanted to choose to be optimistic, I'd just one up you and say I predict them to win the World Series, and I just can't do that in good conscience.
Not on a device that's actually recorded.
Exactly.
You don't want people digging that up on you.
Although I got to say, I predicted them to be in the World Series last year, and that didn't work out so well at all. Although it wasn't a bad year. Heck, I'll take 90 wins again this year. Who's going to be the best starting pitcher for the Reds this year?
Matt Latos.
That's who I say.
I'm gonna say that we're all gonna rue the fact that they didn't sign him to a contract earlier,
because he's about to get expensive.
He's gonna add $20 million to his total deal this year.
Yeah. And he'll be on the open market. He'll be absolutely worth. I think he's got a big payday ahead of him. And I don't know. I'm not signing the check, so I don't know if the Reds are going to be able to make that, give him that payday. I hope so, since I'm not signing those checks, because I love that guy. Best hitter not named Joey Votto?
Jay Bruce.
Jay Bruce.
Durr.
Obviously, yeah.
Jay Bruce. If the Reds make it to the playoffs, it is more than likely because Jay Bruce had a 6-win season.
There you go. Billy Hamilton. Is he a legitimate Rookie of the Year contender?
Oh, absolutely. He's going to be a contender because he's probably still going to steal 70 bases, which will make a lot of news. The question is he getting on base enough to really be that valuable, though?
Well, he doesn't have to get on base that much, in my opinion. He's going to get so much publicity, especially early in the season, because everyone wants to see this guy based on what he did last September. I think he's got an awfully good chance. He doesn't even have to have a great season, really, by my count, for him to be a runaway Rookie of the Year. I mean, you could run into a guy like we saw last year with Fernandez. I think he won the Rookie of the Year for the Marlins.
Mm-hmm.
And who was he was legitimately great. But I think that Hamilton is going to get so much publicity, and he's going to turn into a star in Cincinnati before he will have really earned it. I really think he's going to do well enough this year. And when I say well enough, I think probably a .320 on base percentage with the number of stolen bases he's going to give is going to make Joe Fan think that this guy is a superstar.
Right. He's got the type of skills that will be overvalued.
Right. Flashy. Yeah.
Yeah, but that does not mean that he won't be valuable. He just right. He's likely to be overvalued, he could surprise us and put a .340, .350 on base percentage up there, or he could struggle and struggle to be .300. He's the big X factor, that's for sure.
Oh yeah, if he puts up a .340 on base percentage, this guy's an all-star. In my opinion, especially if the defense is as good as advertised, and should be a significant upgrade over last year's center field defense.
Yep.
Last question, and I hate to sort of make you step out on this particular limb, and maybe I should make the prediction first rather than asking you. Ryan Ludwig. Is Ryan Ludwig going to be a one-win player this year?
Oh, yeah.
You think he'll be a one-win player?
Yes. I will say 1.5 wins.
1.5 wins. Could Chris Heisey do any worse if Chris Heisey were the starter? I mean, Chris Heisey gets exposed maybe if he plays too much, and he's had chances and never grabbed the brass ring. I just feel like defensively he's a little bit better. Well, maybe a lot better. But
I think Chris Heisey's going to see some playing time. I think left field will not be the black hole that it was last year. I think between the two of them, and maybe I should back off the 1.5 because I was just realizing what I was saying compared to what I had been thinking. Really what I was kind of thinking is that between the two of them that they'd be like a 2.5 win tandem. And so I shouldn't give so much of that credit to Ludwig because it's really kind of going to depend on how their playing time is spread out. But yes, I think eventually we'll see a more improved Ludwig. I don't think we'll see 2012 again, but I think we will see a much more improved Ludwig over what we saw from him last year. I'm not sure, you know, maybe we see 2011 again from Heisey, but I don't think that the spring is indicative of anything more than just Heisey's in a hot stretch right now.
Yeah, I'll take 2.5 wins out of left field. Absolutely. It's an improvement over what we had last year. And, you know, get 2.5 wins out of left field. Billy Hamilton can be adequate in center field. Mesoraco takes a little bit of a step forward. Brandon Phillips really was hurting last year, and he bounces back even just a tiny bit. You know, all of a sudden, this is not a bad-looking offense, if we choose to be optimistic. And then you get that 6 wins out of Jay Bruce that you were predicting.
No. You have mixed my words up. I said if they make the playoffs, it's probably because Jay Bruce had a 6 wins.
Exactly. All right, well, that's enough for now, our final preseason podcast. We'll be back hopefully next week with after a win on opening day. And some excitement in Redsland. It's always exciting, the new season. I'm always ready to get time, maybe a little less excited than I usually am, but still, hope springs eternal.
Absolutely. I mean, if you're going into the season already dreading it, you know, take the season off from baseball. Enjoy something else. Have fun with baseball. It's an event. It's a entertainment. Enjoy it.
Exactly. You know, sometimes we take it far too seriously, frankly. It's supposed to be a diversion. It's supposed to be fun. And, you know, this is a team that should compete for 90 wins or maybe even more. Could be less, but they've got a chance to win that many or more. Heck, that's fun. That's fun to me. That's much better than what
we've seen. Don't let the fear of a disappointing season ruin the fact that baseball is an awesome sport.
Exactly. Thank you. And that probably ought to be our motto here because just the day-to-day, the game is special, and we need to enjoy. Everyone needs to make a point to enjoy that more. It'll be a little more enjoyable if the Reds win 94 games, though.
Yeah, my life will be much better if they do exactly what I want them to do.
Yeah, why don't they just do that?
It's selfish of them, actually.
It's really selfish of them. Joel, what are you doing tonight before the podcast, if you don't mind me asking?
Excuse me, I'm sorry.
What were you doing tonight? Were you signing something?
I was invited to come speak at the Harrison branch of the Cincinnati Library this evening and met some really great Reds fans. We talked Reds. I did a little presentation that I had put together and answered some questions and met some, you know, some older gentlemen and some younger gentlemen and some kids. And I mean, it was great. It was a lot of fun. I don't know if any of them are podcast listeners, but if you were there, I really appreciate it. It was a lot of fun. It was a great opportunity. I'm glad I get to do that kind of stuff every once in a while.
And let's plug the book here. That's what I was trying to give you an opportunity to do there.
Oh, you were being subtle. Well, I didn't actually – I wasn't selling books, so, you know, it was with the library.
Okay.
But, yeah, it's 100 Things Reds Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. It's a good read, companion read to a baseball season.
Absolutely.
And, you know, if you need a ringing endorsement, Jim Kelch told me that he used to read that while he was, you know, doing his business. So
his morning constitutional.
Yes.
Excellent.
So if it's good enough for Jim Kelch, it's good enough for all of you.
Yeah. The choice of Jim Kelch's bathroom. Excellent. yeah, it's a great book. I love it. I have a question. What's this library of which you speak? I think I remember hearing about those. Are those still around?
They have books and DVDs. You know, thank you to the Cincinnati Library.
Excellent.
I am most of the way through. I'm actually just about to start season 3 of The Wire.
Oh,
thanks to the Cincinnati Library.
Oh, so. Excellent, excellent. Well, that's another conversation for another time, but I look forward to talking about The Wire with you, one of my favorites. Joel, let's choose to be optimistic, shall we?
We shall.
All right. Any
if
final
you
words?
If you can't be optimistic on opening day, then when can you be optimistic?
Exactly. What's the point of being a baseball fan? Okay. Appreciate Joel joining me again, and we are going to, I guess, call it quits now. Follow Joel on Twitter at jluckup, LuckHaupt. Follow me at DotsonC, DotsonC. Follow Red Leg Nation at Red Leg Nation, ironically. Go to RedLegNationRadio.com. Sign up to subscribe to the podcast so it automatically download every episode of the podcast. Joel, go Reds.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you all. Appreciate you listening to us. So long.